Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and today's runner comes from the classic cross-country runner to marathoner pipeline and walks us through her 10-year running journey leading up to the New York City Marathon in 2023. We talk about her experience with the 9+1 program, her experience working with a coach for her first marathon, as well as the electricity of running the New York City Marathon in her home city. For newer runners, she provides a great perspective on taking things slow in the beginning and how 26.2 miles is the same distance no matter how fast you finish it, but if you want to see what you're capable of and go for time, that's okay too. Really fun conversation today, so without further ado, let's welcome Athena. Athena, thank you so much for coming on the show this weekend. I'm excited to break down your journey today. How's your Saturday treating you so far?
Good so far. Had a nice relaxing morning, so I'm really excited to talk today.
Awesome. Cool. Well, happy to have you. Let's break down from the beginning. How did you get started in the running world in the first place?
Yeah, so it started my freshman year of high school back in 2015. I was interested in joining track, cross country, and I had joined the indoor track season, which is the second running season, more like sprint, shorter distance on the track. And when I joined, I had no experience running. I remember my first practice, the coach had this out for a warm up, 10 minutes, and I was like on the verge of tears. Like, I remember being so sore the next day.
Yeah.
And I started off actually as a sprinter. I ran like 200 meter races, 400 meter races, but honestly, sprinting was not like my best. At the time, I was just doing it because I was kind of thrown into it. And then towards the outdoor season, the end of my freshman year, my coaches were like, you should join cross country come sophomore year. It would be great. I think it would be better at long distance or longer distance running compared to sprints. So I tried it out and I ended up loving it. And for the rest of high school, I switched to running the 800 meter and the 400 meter. So that was the start of my, I guess, running career, you could say, in high school. And yeah, cross country became my favorite season. We ran more 4Ks than 5Ks, the courses that we ran. But I loved. And then from there, I actually took a break from running in the beginning of college. It was just more like a lazy type thing. Didn't really feel like going out and running. I did join the run club my freshman year of college, and then the pandemic happened, so I went home, didn't really run that much until it came time around my my junior year of college. I was like, oh, I remember I always said I wanted to run a marathon, like, let's get this started. And it went from there. I signed up for my first half marathon, barely trained. I was, you know, it was just walking, a mix of running and walking and stopping. And that was the similar pace for my first three half marathons, just like barely trained.
Sure.
Until I actually signed up for my first marathon and then started to take my training more seriously and have been consistently running for about 2 years now.
Okay, very cool. So yeah, so you had that traditional like track to cross country to marathon runner pipeline.
Yes, definitely.
Love it. So yeah, so you said that the marathon was like something that you always wanted to do. When did that idea first come into your mind? Like, how were you introduced to the marathon distance?
My track coaches had run marathons and half marathons. I think it was also one of those bucket list things. It might have been an idea since even before I joined the track team. It's like, oh, like it could be one of those fun things to do one day. And once I got into running more in high school, I was like, I could see myself eventually doing this. I enjoy running. And, you know, as an adult, how am I going to stay fit when I don't have an organized sport to kind of join? So I feel like it was always in the back of my mind as like, this is something that I want to do one day.
Totally. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay, cool. And since you came from like the sprint distance to, and you worked your way up to like longer distances, what are some of the things that you like about running longer distances versus what you were doing originally?
I feel like with sprint, it's like you could only improve, you know, so much on time. Where I feel like compared to a longer distance, you could have a nice size PR. I mean, even when I was on the cross country team, there were times I would PR by like 20 or 30 seconds, where with sprints, you're only able to, you know, sometimes you're trying to PR by 0.01.
Sure.
Which has happened before. I remember I was trying to hit a goal in a 400 meter race and I was off by 0.05 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
Sometimes it's like those little times. And I also like with long distance, you can kind of just like go as slow as you want. You could go, I mean, you could also do tempos and workouts and speed workouts, but I like that stuff like long runs and easy runs, you're able to just kind of like go a little bit slower, enjoy, listen to music. There's kind of a no pressure aspect to it compared to sprinting, I feel.
Got it. Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So cool. So then started signing up for half marathons. If you remember, like, were you following any sort of training plan at the time, or what did it look like building up to the half marathon distance?
No, there was no training plan. I was like, the summer before, or maybe two summers before I ran my first half, that was when I started to get back into running. And it was just casual 3 to 5 mile runs here and there at whatever mm-hmm. pace, if I wanted to go fast, if I wanted to go slow. There was really no like rhyme or reason to it. And then this summer, that same summer leading up to it, my first half, it was the same thing. I was like, I think if I get myself up to like 8 miles, I'll be okay. I think that if I run 8, I can run another 5. And it was just kind of like whenever I felt like running, I would go run. There was no speed. There was no consistency. It was just kind of like, I just want to finish the race.
Sure. Sure. That makes sense. Yeah. And I think in the beginning, when you're just getting started, I mean, follow a training program. I don't want to like endorse not training for your first half marathon or marathon. But I do think in the beginning, like some of that trial and error really teaches yourself a lot about yourself as a runner and like where your strengths are, what you like, what you don't like. Do you feel like that you experienced some of that for training for your first couple halves?
Yeah, for sure. I would always say, okay, the next one, I'm going to actually train for it. I want to see like how well I could actually do, when you train and see my potential. But sometimes the same thing would happen. I would sign up last minute, or I would kind of forget about it. Or part of it was hitting the 9+1 for the New York City Marathon. So I was like, it's just a race to complete to get into the marathon. So that was part of it too. There was no pressure aspect to hit a certain time.
Totally. Cool. And so New York, obviously that's a big one to run for your first marathon. How did you land on New York? Is that just where you're local, or was there any other reasons why you wanted to run New York as your first?
Yeah, I live in New York. I actually live in Staten Island, so it's very convenient for me. Doing 9+1 is how I got into the New York City Marathon. And you just kind of grew up seeing it on, I never actually watched the New York City Marathon, but growing up, I had always watched it on the news, or you hear about it all the time, or people that have run it in the past. So it was kind of the perfect first marathon to do.
Yeah. I interviewed someone recently that was kind of talking about the 9+1 program and how it can like really push you into running. Like you go from not running any races to running 10 races all of a sudden within a year. So what was your experience with the 9+1 program?
I think it's, if you live local to New York, I think it's one of the best things you could do, especially if New York City is going to be your first marathon. And especially if you have no experience with running whatsoever, because it gives you that feel of being in a race. Maybe not as big of crowds as the New York City Marathon, and there's less pressure and not as many fluid stations and stuff like that. But I think it gives you a good experience of what it's like to run a race. And I know some people, when they don't have experience running, they kind of jump into the marathon right away. But I feel like the 9+1 race program gives you a good feel of like what is it like to run a 5K, a 10K, maybe a half marathon. You have the options of signing up for races. So if you don't want to run a half marathon, you don't have to. But I think it's a good way to get a feel of what it's like to run in a big race with a lot of people, especially if you've never ran before.
For sure. Yeah. Cool. So working your way through that. And what was it like the, for your first, you ran your first half marathon, but what was it like the first time that you crossed a finish line, like when you were in training for your marathon?
Yeah, it's a pretty surreal experience, because I guess, like I said before, the marathon is always one of those bucket list things you have in your mind. And I was like, I'm going to be running it. I'm going to be doing this 9+1. And then when you start to complete these races, you're like, it's becoming real now. Like within the next year or so, training's gonna become more intense, and I'm really gonna be ranking up mileage that I never have had before. So it really becomes this real experience. Like this is happening.
Yeah, we're committed to this thing now.
Yeah, cool. Definitely. You can't back out now. That's how it feels. Like there's no going back. You've invested all the money into these races. You're paying for the New York Roadrunners membership. You're paying for the race. You're investing in like clothes, gel, shoes. So all that fun stuff. It's like, there's no backing out.
No, you're in it now. Yeah. Cool. And then actually starting like training for your first marathon, were you following a plan for that, or like following any resources through 9+1? I know they have plans and stuff like that too.
Yeah. So I actually hired a running coach.
Oh, cool.
I figured since, you know, my other training was not working out at all, or training, I guess you could call it, was not working out, I think I need to hire a running coach. I feel like it would help me get on track and also just open me up to workouts and plans and different types of things that I wouldn't have thought of before, or even like things to help me improve my running that I would not think of on my own. So I actually still work with the same coach today for all of my races. So I think that definitely helped me a lot. It was probably one of the best decisions I could have made when it comes to like my running journey, starting with the New York City Marathon.
That's cool. Yeah, I haven't talked to very many people that hired a coach like for their first marathon. I actually like that you have that perspective. So what do you feel like you learned from taking on a coach when you were like so early on in your marathon journey, so to speak?
One of the things that I like, and I feel like this that I always need, is kind of a schedule or something that'll get me going to run. So I think one of the best things is being on a schedule. I get my workouts every week at the beginning of the week, and I can kind of see my workouts for the week, my mileage. But what I like is I could customize my training plan with my coach. So I give him my time goals for my next races, and he caters the plan to that. But at the same time, if I'm having an off week, or I just need a break, or if I even want to increase what I'm doing, I'm able to speak to him and he could customize my plan for me. And I think that's a good thing too, is that it just opens me up to more customization, flexibility. And when I tell him I need a break or just want like a little bit of more of a slower week, it's like he says, okay, that's fine. It gives more of that motivation. There's less pressure when it's just you creating a plan, I feel like. It's like, I feel like if I was creating my own plan, I'd be like, oh, maybe it's bad that I take an off week or that I need a break. Where I feel like having an extra person outside of just myself is like telling me, yes, that is okay. I think it's good that you need a break for just a week, or we could slow down the mileage that we're doing. I think that also helps, you know, motivate me in training as well.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, because I think, you know, I hear a lot of first runner experience or first marathoner experiences through training where they don't have that resource and everything is just like chaos. It's like you're trying to make decisions on yourself. You're feeling sick. You're not sure if you miss this run, if you're even going to be able to run the marathon. You get into that like, oh, if I skip one run, I'm toast mindset, which is obviously not a healthy mindset to be in. So that makes sense. Just having somebody on your side to like give you confidence, I guess, to make those decisions definitely sounds like it would go a long way.
Totally. And I think it's just a good resource overall to have. And, you know, sitting down and creating a training plan, I was doing research beforehand, and there's so many different options and ways you can go. And you could do this long run this weekend, or, you know, do a 16 or an 18 mile, or you could do this type of speed workout. But it's like, sometimes you don't know what's going to actually benefit yourself. So when I give my running history to my run coach and give him my time goals, and then he starts to see my times in the workouts, I feel like that helps better. It's like, okay, I know this is tailored to me. I know it's good for me. And you're also, you know, having someone guide you with that as well.
For sure. Yeah, cool. So I had a coach that you were working with. How long was the training program? Do you remember? Was it like an 18-week, 20-week, something like that?
I believe it was 20 week. I remember the first 2 or 3 weeks was just kind of building a bit of a base. And he was kind of getting a feel for my running ability. So he was giving me a few test speed workouts, a few test easy runs, just to get a feel for my pacing and then go from there. And I think the actual training part of it was about 18 weeks. I remember I started like beginning mid-June for New York City.
Cool. So training over the summer is no easy task. How was it like getting out there when you know the humidity's bad and you're having to kind of discipline yourself when you're just building discipline? Like what was that experience like?
Yeah, it definitely took a lot to get used to. I mean, luckily when I had run my first half marathon 2 years prior, I started to run in the summer. So I guess, you know, I was used to a little bit, but when you're building up that mileage, especially when it comes to the long run, it's like, okay, now I have to wake up at 5 a.m. That was something that it took a lot to get used to as well, doing that consistently. So trying to beat the humidity, beat the heat. And, you know, it also becomes hard if something in your schedule comes up and your only time to run during the day might be 4 p.m. That is also hard as well. So I think, you know, just being on top of like hydration, eating correct, and also just going slower. I think that helps too when it comes to an easy run and just not putting too much pressure on yourself. If I saw the humidity was like 90%. I wasn't going to put too much pressure on myself if I wasn't hitting the times that I was supposed to be hitting.
Totally. Yeah, you definitely have to have some grace with yourself over the summer. I think they say your pace is like a full 30 seconds or 45 seconds like slower than it normally is, which is just, yeah, insane.
Yeah, I remember my cross country coach would always say summer miles equals full smiles. I see a lot of people also say that too, just in general in the running community. And it's true. Like the second October hit, it's like, okay, wow, I really do feel the improvement a lot more and I see it.
Totally. Yeah. And that can be like a sigh of relief, especially when you're training for a fall marathon. Yeah. You're like, oh, okay, all the work I've been doing is actually paying off. Wonderful.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I feel like in training, there's always that point where you kind of hit a high point. You're like, I'm building confidence. I know that I can run this marathon, or at least I think that I have a good shot at running this marathon. Did you have a point like that for you where you had a run where you're like, okay, like I can do this thing?
Yeah. So actually in mid-July, I guess more in the beginning of the training, I actually start to feel some pain in my like left hip. Mm-hmm. And to the point where I was doing, like, I would start my run and I'd be like, okay, like, I'm limping at this point. Like, it really, really hurts. Like, I have to go to physical therapy. So I started to go to physical therapy. And, you know, I think at that point, a lot of runners go through that where they have some sort of pain or injury and it starts to become doubtful and you get a little scared with the race approaching. But when I went to physical therapy, I think it was by the end of August, I started to feel like way better. Even mid-August I start to feel better, but I feel like by the end of August I start to feel really, really good. And I was like, at this point, you know I can hit my goals. I started to see a lot more improvement in my runs, and also I felt good. I think physical therapy was helping me a ton, and I stuck with it throughout the rest of my training, even though my injury was healed. It was just one of those things where I'm like, I could do this. You know, temperature is also cooling down a little bit, so I would say like the end of August was that point where I was like, I'm more than capable of doing this. I started to see the improvements in my times and in my runs and in my speed workouts, and that really gave me the confidence as well.
Cool. Yeah. Did you have like a time goal or anything, or just a goal in general for this marathon, or was it finish?
Yeah, my goal was actually to hit under 4 hours. So
okay,
wasn't going to put a ton of pressure because I know New York City is a really hard marathon. The course itself, it's a very hilly course. But if I was shooting for a time goal, I was really trying to hit under that 4 hours. And I think as the training started to continue, especially as we started to enter September, and I would look at my times, I started to be like, okay, this is becoming more of a serious goal because I know based off of my workouts and my runs that I could probably hit this time goal.
Cool. Yeah, that's such a good feeling when it's like, it's a loose goal. You're like, it would be great if I could hit it. And then it starts to feel like, oh yeah, I can actually do this thing. What types of like speed work were you doing? What was your coach programming you?
Some of it was, you know, things like 400, 800 repeats. Some of it was tempos, maybe mile repeats. One of the things that I noticed he would give me sometimes is going speed for time rather than distance. So every once in a while I'll get a workout, it's like 2x5 minutes fast, and then maybe like 3x7 minutes, 2x5 minutes. And I think that is also a fun test to do. One of the things that he also gave me was workouts within my long runs. And I feel like that was what really gave me the confidence, was because I would do some weekends, I would just do regular long runs, let's say 16 miles, your regular easy pace. And then some weekends it would be a, let's say 4 mile warm up. And then I would get mile repeats within there. Sometimes it would be like 2 miles fast, 1 mile slow, 2 miles fast, 1 mile slow, or it would just be all types of range of workouts. Or sometimes I would get like 4 maybe mile warm up, 7 mile tempo in it, and then the remainder of whatever that long run would be, maybe a mile or two, would be cool down. And I feel like that was what started to give me the confidence. It's like, I could hold this pace for this much mileage, and I feel good afterwards. I think I'm more than capable of doing this within the marathon. And I think that is one of the things that I love continuing for all the races that I've done, is having workouts incorporated into my long runs. I feel like it just helps within the distance, especially if you're trying to become a faster runner.
Totally. Yeah. Progression, it's something that I've been doing a little bit recently too. It's like, it helps, but it's like runner's math. I feel like it's the if you have 16 miles on the calendar but you have 2 mile like increments where it's all broken up, it feels like it's like, oh, it's only 8 miles, it's only eight little increments that I'm having to do instead of 16. So I don't know how you feel about it, but like it's been helping me a ton mentally, like get through these long runs.
No, exactly. It's like, oh, once I pass like 10, I'm basically almost done, like 3, it's a half marathon, you know, one of those situations too.
For sure. Yeah. Well, cool. So yeah, so you had this time goal, you were starting to feel a little bit more confident. What about your first taper? Like was your taper like 2 weeks? Is that what your coach program do?
I think I did 3 weeks. Yeah, I've done 3 weeks for my tapers. And honestly, whenever I feel like for the two marathons that I've done, I'm so excited to be in taper. I know some marathoners, they start to go a little crazy. Like, oh,
it's
God,
one or the other.
Yeah. No, I honestly love it because you're training for so long and, you know, you start to really hit like a high mileage right before taper. And it's like, okay, this is a nice break to have. And especially if you're at a good point in your training, you're feeling confident within your race and how your training went. It's just a time of reflection and focusing on your upcoming race and just prepping your body to run your race.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just love having that break.
Yeah, I think it's a good mental break. And it also, like, you're by the time you hit that peak mileage, you know, you're just feeling so fatigued. If you had to run a marathon the next week, like, gosh, it would be a mess. So having that time to like let your body recuperate and get back to normal is definitely important. And what were you learning about like fuel during your first marathon? Was that something that you were really looking into?
Yeah, that was something that I actually never knew was a thing until I started running my first marathon. I didn't really know what gels were and, you know, all sorts of fuel. So that was something that definitely I researched a lot and tested out a bunch of different products, different brands that supply gels. One of the things was I also noticed I was becoming hungry on long runs. So figuring out, okay, do I need to eat more before? Do I eat something during? Can gel sustain me through the whole long run? That's something that was very a trial and error part of marathon training. I'm very lucky in that I have a strong stomach and, you know, gels don't really affect me as much as they affect a lot of other people, I feel like you hear people say online. So it was nice being able to try stuff out without really worrying for me. It was more like texture and tasting. And I was like, okay, I know I don't like goos. I don't like the thickness of them. Same thing with like the honey stinger ones. At first I was using Sis, and I think it's Huma or Huma. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Yeah. But my favorite's Morton. But they're a little bit more on the pricey side, so I try not to train with them as much. But those ended up being my go-to. But Morton is definitely my favorite, not sponsored, but definitely my favorite for racing. And I do occasionally train with them because I like to prep my body with it for a race day.
Cool.
But and it's definitely a learning curve.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, fuel is like we'll talk about fuel towards the end too, but I always say like it's so individual. Like you have to try everything and anything, especially if you're a first marathon, just feel out what works best for you. And I also think it's super important to test on your long runs and test on your short runs. Like what does it feel like to take a gel at this pace? How many do I need to take before I get hungry? Like all of that you should be working on in training for sure.
Definitely.
Did you have like a strategy going into race day for when you were going to take gels, like every 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 3 miles, something like that?
Yeah, mine was about every 3 to 4 miles. I'll be honest, I'm a very slow like gel eater. I feel like a lot of people sometimes they slurp down those gels. That's not something that I can do. I really like take my time. So usually I would start around like the 0.5 mile mark. There's been times that it takes me like a full mile to complete a gel. I don't know how beneficial that is or if it's helping or hurting me, but I just can't. I'm not just the type of person who just slurps down a gel in 2 seconds. So sometimes, let's say if I wanted to take a mile at, oh my God, take a gel at mile 4, I would start taking it at maybe 3.5 to finish it by mile 4. And my strategy has always stuck. Usually around every 3.5 to 4 miles is when I take gels, and I found that has worked for me.
That's perfect. Yeah. Okay, cool. So I guess let's fast forward to race day a little bit. New York, you live there, so the logistics are a little bit easier for you, but I know it can still kind of be a nightmare trying to get to the start line. What was the logistics like for you on race morning?
I have to say, start line is probably the best thing for me because I live on Staten Island. So it is the best thing. I was in wave 4, so that I believe it started around 10:50. So I woke up at 7 a.m. on marathon day. Like,
oh, you were chilling.
very rare for people to say on New York City Marathon Day. So I really lucked out with that one. My parents drove me to the start line. I got dropped off and then they headed into the city to go and watch me. So it was perfect timing. I got dropped off. It was a very relaxing morning, you know, looking good. Woke up at 7 a.m., had a regular, you know, breakfast. I had like waffles. And then went to Star Village. And honestly, I was chilling. There was not a lot of stress.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. No, that's perfect. I think that's the best way to run a World Majors, to just roll out of bed and head to the start line. How were you feeling? Like nerves, excitement? What was going through your head as you were kind of lining up for the start line and getting ready?
I have to say, I was not nervous at all. I was more excited than anything. I think I was really excited to also just be running the New York City Marathon, not even my first marathon. I think the New York City aspect of it, growing up here, especially running through all five boroughs, the excitement just surrounding it, the crowds, I was just excited for all of it. Also, like running over the Verrazano Bridge, the amount of times I've driven over that bridge is I'm driving over it later today. So, you know, it's just a part of my daily routine. And then being able to run over that, I think, is just a really cool experience. So I would think I was just excited more than anything. I had no nerves going into this race whatsoever. I remember going into the corrals and then, you know, being led up onto the Verrazano Bridge, and I asked someone to take a photo of me, and I was so excited.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So you're feeling pretty good. And had you, I mean, backtracking just a little bit before we break down the race, but like, had you watched the New York City Marathon before? Is that something that you had spectated in the past?
I've never went in person, but I've always seen it on the news the morning of, and, you know, growing up, Channel 7, ABC News, they would always have the New York City Marathon on. So I always grew up watching it. I never knew anyone, at least close to me, that had ran it to go and spectate. So that was the reason why I just never went and watched it in person. But yeah, I always saw it on the news growing up.
Gotcha. Cool. So did you have any idea, like, I haven't ran New York myself, but I've heard the energy is just like unreal. Did you have any idea at what like scale that was going to be at for New York, or was that all a surprise, like as you went through it?
I definitely knew New York was going to bring the energy for sure. I mean, they bring the energy with any sort of big event that comes to the city. But one of the things that definitely shocked me the most was going onto First Avenue up to the Queensboro Bridge. I've never heard a crowd so loud before. Like, I knew the energy was going to be there, but that was definitely, like, they brought the energy on First Avenue. I remember, like, getting an Apple Watch notification saying, like, protect your ears. This is too loud.
That's awesome.
So I kind of knew they were going to bring the energy, but, like, seeing it in person and, you know, running the course when everyone's just cheering you on, it's such an amazing feeling.
Totally. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, let's break down the race. We can break it up in kind of however you want to break it up. Let's maybe start with the first half. How were you feeling for the first half marathon distance?
Yeah, I was feeling really good. I remember going over the Verrazano Bridge. My goal was to hit like 30 to 45 seconds slower than goal pace, which they always say on mile two, try to hold back because the first mile is all uphill and then the second mile is all downhill. So it's really easy to, you know, speed up. And I have to say, I did speed up. When I look back at my paces, I'm like, oh God, like,
it's hard not to.
I went like 30 seconds faster than my goal pace. And I thought I was going slow, but I really wasn't. I guess, you know, it's kind of hard to gauge, especially if you're first marathon and you're going all downhill. Yeah. And then you go onto Fourth Avenue in Brooklyn, and it's fairly flat. I feel like you're going straight most of the way. I didn't really have any issues with, like, you know, going through people in the crowd. I was overall feeling really, really great my first half. I'm trying to think. Sorry, I'm just gonna pause for a second.
No, you're
I'm
good.
Trying to visualize the course in my head. Okay. Yeah. So I saw some family at around mile three. They actually live in the area right there. So I saw them at mile three. So that was kind of like a nice little boost in the beginning of the race. And then I saw my parents and uncle also around like mile seven or eight. And then you start to enter Williamsburg, and Williamsburg was a really, really fun area to enter. You know, there's a lot of young people, there's a lot of partying going on. So I feel like the crowds had really picked up around that point. And you're starting to go into mile eight, nine, 10. And then up into the first half, you hit the Pulaski Bridge around mile 13. And that I was feeling great. I think I hit like my half marathon time only like 4 or 5 minutes off my PR, and that was my goal. I was like, if I could finish the first half in under 2 hours, I believe I finished it within like 157, 156 around there. I can't remember exactly. I know I'm on pace to finish on time, and I was overall feeling great. Like, there was no issues, no pain. Gels were working well in my favor. The crowds were great. So I was feeling really confident within the first half. I remember I had, like, my friends texting me, and I was getting the notifications, and I'm texting back, like, as I'm running. I'm like, this is so much fun. Like, I'm doing so good. But yeah, I was really feeling great the first half.
Awesome. Yeah, good to hear. So everything was going to plan. And then, yeah, I'll let you kind of break down the rest of it however you want to. Whatever, if you hit a wall or anything like that, I'll let you kind of take it from there.
Yeah, so Pulaski Bridge is mile 13. And it's funny because 2 weeks before, I've never been to that area before. But 2 weeks before, I had to go that way for work. And I was driving over and I was like, I think I'm running over this bridge for the New York City Marathon. And I looked and I was like, oh, wow, I am. And it's a pretty steep hill. It's not a long hill, but it's a pretty steep hill. So I was like, oh, another hill added to the list that I was not prepared for. But it honestly was not bad. Like, I felt like my training had really paid off for, you know, one of the first big hills of the race at mile 13. And what I loved is at the top of the Pulaski Bridge, there were photographers sitting in the middle. There were people running on each side of the bridge. And there were photographers sitting in the middle. And I have one of my favorite running pictures I've ever taken, that was ever taken to me. I was like right basically in the middle, and I kind of like throw up like a little bit of like a peace sign like this, and in the back there's a street sign. It says welcome to Brooklyn, basically if you were driving the opposite direction. Yeah. It's like one of my favorite photos ever taken of me. So smiled at the cameras, and then from there you enter Queens. I have to say, was a little bit more quiet at some parts, and Queens, you're not in there for a long period of time, so it's more of like, okay, get to the Queensboro Bridge. Get to the Queensboro Bridge, you're around mile 15. And I feel like this was the one part of the race we hear a lot of people talk about. And, you know, there's no crowds. It's probably one of the only parts of the race besides the start of the race where there is no crowds. And it's definitely a harder part of the race than the first mile on the Verrazano. So I went onto it, and honestly, I felt really, really good. I'll get to a part later where I feel like a lot more people should talk about the New York City Marathon that is harder, in my opinion, than the Queensboro Bridge. Personally, I felt great. I think it's a good time to just reevaluate. Even if you are maybe struggling at that point, it's just a good point to just push through, take it slow rather than walk. You know, you have 10 miles left or 11 miles left. So just push through and reevaluate how you're feeling. And I think it's like, okay, am I going to slow down? Am I going to conserve? Or am I going to pick up my speed? Or am I going to maintain exactly what I'm doing right now? So I think that was the perfect time to just focus, reevaluate. If you look to your left, you see downtown New York City, and then if you look to your right, you see uptown. So I think it's, you know, you could also take in the views. If you need to slow down, take in the views, fuel up, take your gels. If you have drinks on you, take your electrolytes, take your water. And honestly, personally, I was feeling great. Towards the end of the Queensboro Bridge, that's when you start to hear, I like to say, I call it the roars of First Avenue, because that's how loud it was. And I was so excited to be entering First Avenue. So you come off, you do a little loop, you go onto First Avenue, and the energy, it's just electric. That was the second point of where my family had met me on the course. So said hi to them, maybe around probably as you're nearing the 80s. I saw some few other friends and people that I know that were spectating on the course and all along First Avenue. So the energy was really so much fun leading up to the Bronx. And that's a point where it definitely becomes a harder part of the race because you're nearing the higher mileage of 17, 18, 19. But the energy really, really carried me through during that point of the race. And by the time I had entered the Bronx around mile 20, that's when I started to feel it. I wouldn't say I necessarily hit a wall around mile 20, but I definitely started to feel, you know, the pains of running a marathon a lot more, the mental barriers that you kind of go through, because, you know, a lot more of the hills are going to be coming in the second half of the New York City Marathon. So kind of going over another bridge, and it's like, okay, I still have another bridge to go over after this, was definitely, you're kind of entering that stage where you're like, okay, you just have to push through. There's 6 more miles. If I ran 20, I could run 6 more. So I go to the Bronx, go through, I start to enter back into Manhattan, go over my last bridge. And I think the part where a lot more people should talk about in the New York City Marathon that I personally think is the hardest is Fifth Avenue before you enter Central Park. I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe it's around mile 21 or 22 when you're entering Fifth Avenue. And I just look straight ahead, and there's just all uphill. uphill.
That's the worst feeling in a marathon to see that, especially like after mile 20 is the worst.
Yeah, and I feel like I did so much research on the course and watched so many videos on it, and I was like, I feel like I don't remember anyone saying that Fifth Avenue was this much uphill. And that was definitely probably the wall, I guess you could say, the wall that I
sure
hit was Fifth Avenue. And oh, I just remember being in so much pain. I was so tired, and I keep looking at my watch. I'm like, I know if I keep this, I can hit my sub 4 hour goal. And I was so tired. I was really pushing through. And then I hit probably about halfway through Fifth Avenue. And all of a sudden I hear people cheering my name, and it is my high school running coaches who are running the New York City Marathon. I had saw them on First Avenue and I said hi, but I didn't know they were on Fifth Avenue as well. I didn't know they crossed over a few blocks because I was texting people. They were like, oh, I'm on 76th. And I would just look out for them on the street signs or something. So yeah. I didn't know they were there. And I feel like they were recording me. They literally jumped onto the course with me, and they were running for like probably not even like 15 seconds. They're like, you're doing so good, you could do it. And it was a funny video, and I'm like, I'm in so much pain, it hurts so bad because I really was in so much pain. But at the same time, that was such a nice motivation to have. It was like, you know, my running coaches were there, they were cheering me on, and they were like, you're doing so good, you're gonna hit 4 hours, because they're tracking me on the apps. So that was really the best push I could have ever gotten the whole entire race. And then you go into Central Park, and honestly, I don't know if it was just the excitement of entering Central Park around mile 24 and you're almost done with the race. I don't know, or maybe the crowds, but I don't know what happened, but I started to feel great. Something happened there. I was
the
like,
adrenaline almost came back.
yeah, exactly. I'm almost done with the race. So mile 24, I feel like if there were rolling hills in Central Park, like I honestly probably don't remember them. It was really a blur. I felt more downhill than uphill, in my opinion, but it could have been the excitement of the race and the adrenaline. And what I have to say, it was definitely an interesting part of the marathon, because I had learned from one of my friends that people start to jump some of the barricades to see their family and friends. So the crowd, I was like, why are the crowds like so tight? Like, I mean, you were barely able to fit like four runners across, maybe five, like at most. So, you know, that's a point where people are walking, people are in pain. So that point I was doing a lot more of like dodging and weaving, but it was also a little bit like, this is very interesting. I feel like this isn't okay, but I had learned from my friend that, you know, people get excited, they're trying to like see their family and friends. And I feel like that was probably the biggest challenge of entering Central Park, was just the crowds closing in, and also the amount of runners that are trying to get through this course. There was just not enough room.
Gotcha.
So even though I was super excited, I feel like that was also a challenge. It's like, I just want to finish, but you know, you don't want to get in anyone's way, you're not trying to, you know, get hurt or hurt someone else. So Central Park was super fun. Turn onto Central Park South, and at that point you're basically done. And I saw my family and friends. That was the last point that my family was waiting for me. They had like my faces and the signs, so it became really easy for me to spot them. And at that point I'm like, okay, like it's now or never, like I have to go. I look at my watch and I'm nearing the 4 hour mark, like I have to go. So I really just gave it my all at the end. You make that last turn, you're leaving Central Park South, and then you re-enter Central Park, and it felt like a sprint finish. Like seriously, like I whatever came into me, I truly, like they say, finish on empty. Like I just gave whatever left that I had in me to finish that race. That I looked at my phone, because I had the New York City Marathon app notifications turned on my phone, and it said I finished in 3 hours, 58 minutes, and 56 seconds.
Oh, let's
seconds.
Go.
So
you made
I had,
it, yeah.
like, just hit it. Yeah. I was so excited. I mean, finishing the race, I, you know, the final crowds and that, like, last, I think, 200 meters of the New York City Marathon is uphill in Central Park, but I really did not even feel it. I was just so excited to be finished in the New York City Marathon, and also trying to hit the time that I wanted to hit. And I finished the race and I started crying. And for me, that's something that does not happen like often. I'm not someone that like gets emotional over like events like that, or, you know, is the type of person to like really cry when something like that happens. But literally they put the medal on me and I was like, I started crying. I was like, wow, like I did it. I finished the New York City Marathon. It's something that I spoke about for so long and spent so much time training for. And it's like, wow, I did it, and I hit my goal, and it was like one of the best feelings ever.
Totally. Yeah, I get chills every single time somebody talks about like accomplishing the goal that they set out for, because it is just such a, it's not a feeling that you can describe to anybody else.
No, it really is not. I say it's no. The best day of my life. Like, I think it will always go down as one of the best days of my life, because it really was that. Like, I think even if I didn't hit my goal, it still would have gone down as one of the best days of my life, just because, you know, it's something that you work for so long, and seeing like all your family and friends out there to cheer you on, and the whole city's out there to cheer you on, and also growing up in New York, it just adds that extra element of something that's just like special. So totally, truly, one of the best days of my life.
Yeah, that's, oh, I love it. So yeah, so I guess when this is going to sound really cheesy, I know a lot of people say this, but they talk about the marathon being like a celebration of all of the training that you put in. And it sounds like for you, that's exactly what that race was. It was just a big like celebration. You didn't really hit a wall. You had a couple tough moments that you had to break through, but for the most part, it was just you and you and making it through the New York City Marathon. So what do you feel like, if you could break it down to like one or two things, what do you feel like you learned about yourself training for and then running the New York City Marathon?
Yeah, I feel like marathon training in general, I mean, obviously New York City, but it just proves, you're able to prove to yourself what you're capable of, and your potential. And I feel like that was that. I mean, thinking back to my early running career in high school, compared to my marathon training, I mean, I ran the New York City marathon at a pace that sometimes I wasn't even able to handle when I would run cross country in high school. And part of that was, you know, being a teenage girl with a bunch of other teenage girls on a track team, and we just encourage each other and we don't, you know, really want to do the work after school. But just, I never would have thought that I would be able to run to the ability that I'm running to now, and that I did at the New York City Marathon, ever. So it really is just proving to yourself that you're capable of doing so much more than you think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very cool. So that was the first marathon experience. I love it. And then from there, I know that you've ran a second marathon, and you ran your second marathon in Chicago. So went for another world major. Were you immediately thinking after New York City, like, I'm signing up for another one, let's run this thing back? Or how did that thought kind of enter your mind?
Yeah. So before I actually discovered the world majors, you know, even back in my early track and field career, same thing as the marathon, one of those bucket list items, and you kind of forget about it. And then when it came time for the New York City Marathon, I was like, oh, the world's majors. I remember, you know, discovering this a few years ago. So I remember saying, I better enjoy running the New York City Marathon because I want to complete the world's majors. I'm the type of person that just likes to set goals and go after them and accomplish them. So, and setting goals like that, and even just setting a goal such as like running a marathon, it gives you the motivation to do it as well. So I was like, okay, I want to run the majors one day. Hopefully I enjoy running a marathon, because no matter what, I'm running the majors. Like, whether I like it or not, I'm doing it. I'm going to accomplish it. So luckily I ended up loving running the New York City Marathon. And I said, okay, what is going to be my next race? And I applied for pretty much all the majors I was possibly able to apply to, even before I had run New York, just in hopes of getting into a major for 2024. Didn't get into any lotteries whatsoever. So still same thing for 2025, no lotteries. Mm-hmm. But
yep,
for 2024 Chicago, I actually went through a charity. I went through charity Team World Vision. So that was actually kind of a late sign up. It was in May when I had officially gotten into Chicago. So I kind of given up all hope in running a world's major or marathon in 2024. I was just going to do maybe like a bunch of halves, see if I could get my time down, maintain training. And then I had the opportunity to sign up for this charity, and I was like, I'm going to do it. We're going to run another major this year. I know I can. Like, I want to have a chance at PRing again. So yeah, I ended up doing Chicago, and that was a great experience as well. I loved it.
Yeah. What do you think are some things that changed for you from New York City to Chicago, if anything? Like, what are some adjustments that you made or things that you wanted to work on to hit that new PR?
Yeah, I think after New York City, I definitely overall just felt myself getting faster in general. I had run a half marathon in May, the Brooklyn half. I'd run that one a few times, and I just kept PRing. I ran a half marathon right before the New York City Marathon. I ran the Staten Island half. I ran a 1:52, and then I ran a 1:44:59, so about like a 1:45.
Wow. Yeah.
In the Brooklyn half. And overall, I just felt myself getting faster, and I wanted to keep that. I didn't want to lose it. I definitely enjoy like PRing and seeing myself getting faster and setting goals for myself and being able to achieve them. So with Chicago, it was like, you know, I want to PR. I know I'm getting faster. Let's push myself. Let's see how much further I can push. And I feel like in between New York and Chicago, New York was more, I wouldn't say it was a trial and error, but it was more of just like figuring out what works best for me in long distance running in all aspects, whether that's fueling or the running itself and the training, where I feel like after New York, I had learned a lot and I was able to carry that over to Chicago. And I'm still learning to this day about like my running abilities and what works for me and what's best for me. But I feel like there was a different sort of like shift in the training, because it's like, okay, I already ran a first marathon. I know what I'm capable of. I know I'm capable of finishing a marathon. It's like, okay, now let's push, but let's not forget everything that we had learned when I ran New York.
Totally. Yeah. And what were some of those things that you felt like you learned? Like, I know there's probably, the list could probably be like 20 things deep, but like if maybe you broke it down to a couple of things, what were some of those things that you learned as yourself as a runner in New York that you took to Chicago?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things, I speak about this with my physical therapist a lot, is taking care of your body outside of running. Mm. When I had started my, you know, running career back in my high school days, you know, we would just do a few stretches and we were able to get by because we were running 2-3 mile races. Where with marathon training, you can't do that. Even with Chicago, I struggled. I was having some like calf issues during training, so I went back to physical therapy, and you know, I learned that a lot of my issues result in my hip. I do have kyphosis, which is like the curve of your upper spine, which goes down to my back, like pretty much like my back and my hips are, you know, take a lot of toll on them, especially when it comes to marathon training. You know, the constant hitting of the ground, you know, that's going to affect your hips, which is going to affect my back as well. So, you know, keeping a good running form is something that is very important for me when running. And also just like taking care of my back and my hips, because that is where a lot of the problems start, even if something else is hurting me. So, you know, in the past, I've dealt with IT band issues, which is a result of an issue in my hips. Same thing, like, you know, New York City marathon training, I had an issue in my hip. And then when it came to Chicago, I had issue with my calves, but part of it has to do with an imbalance in my hips, which also kind of has to do with my back issues. So I wouldn't say that it affects me, like my back doesn't affect me too much when I'm running. It doesn't like hinder anything. But it's more of like, I have to be on top of it and really take care of myself. And whether that's stretching and strengthening and doing single leg strength, I definitely need to be on top of that if I want to improve and also continue to not get injured. And one of the things I also learned through my physical therapist as well is how important single leg strength is.
For sure,
that was something that I guess I never really thought of. It's like when you are running, you're pretty much only using one leg at a time,
right?
Which is something that I never thought about. So I think some of those, just like whether you want to call it yoga or stretches and different strength techniques specifically for single leg, have helped me a lot. I think that is one of the things that have helped me a ton when it comes to just keeping myself in shape and injury free and just preventing any future injuries, especially knowing that I have a lot of more issues that are caused in my hips.
Totally. No, I love that. I that hasn't come up on the show before, so I'm glad somebody brought it up. Yeah, single leg stuff is super important. And strength training, I think when you've trained for your first marathon, you kind of convince yourself that, oh, like, I don't need these things. I'm just testing things out. I want to see what I can do. But the earlier you can invest in yourself and invest in strength training, mobility, and all of the things that we kind of joke about, like, oh, just skip it, the better. Like, your body's going to thank you so much for it. It's one of my biggest regrets as a runner is like not taking some of that stuff more serious before things start to go wrong and before you start having the injuries and that kind of thing.
Totally. And I think it's a lot more than stretching too. I think I would always think, okay, I'm gonna touch my toes and do some calf stretches and quad stretches and whatever other stretches I could do, hamstring stretches. It's a lot more than stretching. Part of it has to do, and it's not even strength in terms of like lifting weights. Sometimes it's just like using your own body. So squats, resistance bands, clamshells, all things like that, you know, make your legs overall stronger, but also just get your muscles and your legs and your hips and your body to where they need to be and just keep them conditioned and strong enough to carry you through long runs and speed workouts without destroying your muscles.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Super important. Okay, cool. And then, I mean, we don't have to break down like the whole Chicago experience, but I at least want to hear like your goal, if you were going in with a time goal. I know you were trying to PR, and then just how the finish line ended and everything ended up for you.
Yeah, so I actually kind of was giving myself a big time jump when it came from like New York to Chicago. I knew Chicago was a flatter course, so I was like, okay, there's a lot more potential for me to also have a decent sized PR. So I was aiming between a 3:35 and a 3:40, probably closer to the 3:40 mark. 3:35 was just like seeing how much I could really push myself. So I actually finished within 3 hours, 39 minutes, and 11 seconds. So when I did the math, it was like a 19 minute 45
yeah, that's
second jump,
huge.
which is a major, major PR. But I think it also comes down to one of those things where it's like, I'm perfectly capable of doing this. And I also upped my training. I spoke with my coach and I was like, I have a big time goal. Eventually my goal is to Boston qualify one day. So just speaking with him and saying, I want to Boston qualify one day, and I know it's not going to be right away, but how can I work on this and improve in my training to eventually get me there? So one of the things was upping my weekly mileage. With New York City, I think my highest weekly mileage was between 35 to 40 miles a week, where when Chicago came, I went up to 50 miles a week. So I think something as simple as upping my mileage helped me a lot and helped me reach my time goal. Part of it was also running on a way flatter course than New York City. You know, New York City is like 800 feet of elevation, if not more, where Chicago is 200. Where I live, where I do my long runs, I'm always dealing with elevation and hills. Usually like my average 8-mile long run has the same amount of elevation as a New York City marathon. So when I'm training a lot of elevation and then going into a race that is mainly flat, doesn't have a ton of elevation, I think that definitely helped me PR as well.
Totally.
The crowds were great in Chicago. I think the one difference between New York and Chicago was I spoke about First Avenue and how those crowds helped me through like miles 16, 17, 18, where I feel like those were some of the most dead miles of Chicago. So it was that I think that was one of my like mental barrier points within the Chicago was more in the middle of the race rather than the ends, because I feel like the ends definitely had way better bigger crowds. I mean, New York City did too. The crowds were really big towards the end, where I feel like that middle point where you really needed around like 15, 16, 17, 18, Chicago, the crowds weren't as big. So that was probably one of the more like mental parts where I had to push through with Chicago. But it was one of those things where I crossed the finish line. I'm like, look at that. Like, I'm capable. I'm able to do it. I'm able to like reach my potential. And it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, I've done this for 2 marathons now and I want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you realize what you're capable of doing, you get to a point where it's like, okay, there's no stopping me now.
Totally. Yeah, no, I agree. And marathon training is like, and running in general, I won't even just say marathon training, but yeah, running in general is one of those things that you can consistently raise the bar. You don't have to, like, we can be clear with that. You can, your yeah. goals are your goals. If you want to, you know, if your goal is just to finish, that's just as valid of a goal as, you know, wanting to have a PR. But if you do want to have those aggressive goals, and you do want to keep proving to yourself, like, it's really never ending. You know, you can keep coming up with new ways to push yourself. I think that's why so many people have like such longevity in this sport.
Totally. Yeah. Even finishing it is an accomplishment in itself.
Totally.
You know, I mean, who could say that they just casually ran 26.2 miles?
So, yeah, no matter how long it takes you.
Yeah. So even if your goal is just finishing and not going for a time, it's still, you know, the same amount of like, can't think of the word, but the same, you know, you should still be just as proud of yourself. And you know, I've had those races too. After Chicago, I ran the Philly half and I was like, if I PR, it's not the biggest deal. I'm just doing this for fun, just to see what it's like to run another race. And you know, I didn't PR, I wasn't really putting the pressure on myself too. So you know, it's the same exact thing. If you don't PR, don't beat yourself up, because you still went through all the training, you still put in all of the hard work, and you know, anything could happen on race day, anything can go wrong. So it's, and it has nothing to do with you. There's so many outside aspects that can affect your race. So, you know, just finishing the race alone in itself is such an accomplishment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, cool. I guess kind of on that note too, I always like to ask like for some new runner advice at the end. Something that if you're thinking about somebody that's thinking about running their first marathon, what's advice that you'd offer somebody like that?
Oh, I love this. I always say go for time rather than distance. So if you're just getting into running, I've never ran before, don't put pressure on yourself to run 1 mile or 2 miles or 3 miles. I always say like, start off with maybe 5 or 10 minutes, whatever you're capable of. Like maybe it's 5 minutes. Start off with 5 and keep running 5 minutes for a certain amount of time until you're like, you know, maybe I could go up to 7 or 8 or 10 and build from there, and maybe I could run for 30 minutes within a few months. And then as you start to progress, maybe you could say, okay, maybe within 30 minutes I have been running 3 miles-ish, 3.5 miles, let's say. Can I get faster? I guess that makes sense. Let's see if I could get faster. So I think that is one of the biggest tips I give, is like, go by time first rather than distance. And then once you see what you're running within that time frame, maybe see if you could get faster from there. I think it's less of a mental barrier when you're going for time rather than distance. I feel like a lot of people put pressure on themselves to build up in distance, because that is something that you do when you're marathon training. You're saying, okay, I'm going to do a 14 mile long run, then a 16, then an 18, then a 20. Whatever it may be. So I feel like if you start yourself off with time, it's going to be way less pressure on yourself. It's going to be less of a mental barrier to get through compared to trying to run a mile or 2 miles or 3 miles. So definitely go for time, and there's no pressure. And then from there, when you're feeling confident, go to see how fast you could, how many miles you could run within that time.
Totally. I love that. Yeah. Like, build a base first. Don't go straight into it thinking, totally. Oh, I have to run a marathon tomorrow. Nobody does that. So the slower you can start, the more you can just like learn about yourself in the beginning, the better. I think that's great. Totally. Well, cool. And then last couple of questions I have for you are just more fun questions. You kind of already answered one of them earlier about fuel. I'll give the disclaimer again. Fuel is so individual. We're going to talk about shoes too. That is so individual. Please do your own thing. Go get your feet measured. Go test out all the gels that you can, all that good stuff. But for you, I know you like Morton. Is there any other gels besides like Morton Cyst and Huma that you really liked through training?
Honestly, I feel like there's still a bunch that I need to try. Right now, I'm comfortable with what I use. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had friends that are also runners and they use all different types of gels as well. And, you know, we'll kind of text and compare, and I give them my advice and then they'll tell me what they like. But for now, I'm comfortable with what I use. Those are the three that I found that I like the most. I feel like also when you're training and you're using them so much, you kind of get tired of some of the same ones. So like, yeah. For now, like, Cyst is kind of being like put to the side a little bit. I think I've overused it at the moment until I'm like ready to use it again. But for now, like, Morn and Humor are my two main. I mean, there's still a ton that I feel like I have to try. Like, I hear of like Spring Energy and different brands. So there's still a bunch I need to try, but for right now I'm pretty comfortable with what I use.
Perfect. Yeah, I love it. And then shoes. What have you liked for shoes over time?
Oh, I always say Asics is my go-to in terms of regular daily runs. Yeah. I've used Asics since, I've actually made this mistake in high school. I've used Asics forever, but I remember during my like junior or sophomore year of high school cross country, I was like, oh, I want like a lighter shoe. So I picked like the lightest, thinnest Nike shoe on the market, probably cheapest I could find. Yeah. Not go well, it ended in a really bad injury. So after that, I was like, okay, we're going to go back to Asics. Yeah. I feel like for me, those have always worked. They have the like best support for daily runs, long runs. And then in terms of speed workouts, I got a pair of Sauconys. I've been trying them out, seeing how I like them.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll switch. But for racing, I'm definitely a big Nike fan. So right now, my Alphafly 2s have treated me well for both New York and Chicago. For Chicago, I did get blisters, different color, did get some blisters on my feet. I don't know. So I might try the 3s in my next, whenever my next half or marathon may be. But yeah, I love Nike shoes for racing. And also, off topic of shoes, but socks, I love Feature socks. Those are
I love
socks.
Features. Nobody ever brings up socks on this show, but I'm like, Features, hands down, the best ones.
That's
for
why
sure.
I was really surprised when I had gotten blisters during Chicago, because when I was training for New York, I just had a regular old pair of socks on. And my feet were like getting destroyed with blisters and stuff. And then I had discovered Features, I think at like an expo, or I don't even remember how I discovered them. I think I just randomly bought them one day, and they changed my life, like literally changed my life. Don't really have any issues in terms of blisters and stuff like that since, but those are my favorite socks. So if anyone needs a good pair of socks, I tell all my runner friends, I'm like, you don't understand.
Features.
You need to get them. Like,
yes.
Please.
My only complaint is more colors. Features, if you're listening, for like this slim chance that you're listening to this podcast, colors. We need colors. I have so many white pairs of Features that I need something else.
I have like all black, so.
Yeah.
But I have like one like neon pink pair or something.
Right. Yeah. Love it. Okay, cool. And then the last question is a question from the audience. I like to always get marathon questions from people on my TikTok and Instagram to see what they're thinking. The question for you today is to tell if you could tell us about a training run that you either didn't finish or completely skipped. She says that I think it's important for people to understand that it's okay if you have a moment of weakness during training. I think that's an awesome question. And that's from Paige on TikTok. So thank you for the question.
Thank you, Paige. there's definitely a ton of long runs and workouts that I've skipped or not completed, like more times than I could probably count on like one or two of my hands. There's one I remember vividly. It was when I was training for New York. I did this training run in Central Park. I forgot why. I think I was like in the Manhattan for work or something. And I had a 16-mile long run. And by like, honestly, like overall, it was just a hot day. I think I had to run midday for this long run too. And during the run, I was like, this is just not a fun run at all. And I think I had stopped at like 14.5, which is like, I was pushing through by like mile 10 and 11. I was like, I really want to stop. And, you know, it's still the beginning of my training and I was really just trying to get through. And it had nothing to do with, I think I was just overall tired. It wasn't like a pain in a certain area. And I hit like 14. I was like, okay, I'm just going to push through the last 2 miles. And then I hit 14.5 and I was like, we can't do this anymore. Like, this is just too much. I was too tired. I remember I just went to a patch of grass in the middle of Central Park and just laid down. I put my legs up on a tree. I was so tired after that. And there's been some other workouts. I mean, I remember during Chicago when I started to have some calf pain, I had a 14-mile long run. I stopped at mile 7. And there's probably some other speed workouts that I can't remember that I have stopped or haven't completed, or there's been a ton that I've skipped as well. Sometimes it's just because like my schedule is really busy and I just can't get to it and I'm not going to pressure myself to run, or maybe I'm just feeling like really, really tired that week, or just not feeling well and I will skip a run or two. Sometimes I'm not the type of person that puts a ton of pressure on myself when I skip a run, because I feel like it'll only help me in the long run, not to like make a little pun or anything, but in the long run I feel like it ends up helping me more, because you get a little bit of a mental break, a physical break. And I've noticed whenever I keep pushing myself and keep pushing myself to, whether it's complete the workout or get every single workout in, I just end up becoming more tired and not as motivated. Whereas if I just like take it a little bit more easy, or I skip one run, it's not the end of the world. You're still going to be able to complete your race, complete your marathon. Skipping a 5-mile easy run is not going to hurt you in any way. I feel like if anything, it makes you a better runner. It also creates boundaries for yourself within your training. And yeah, mentally, physically, it just helps you getting a little bit of a break sometimes. So it's completely okay to skip runs.
Totally. Yeah, I think that there's definitely a point of like diminishing returns when you're forcing yourself to do something that you're physically either not capable of doing, or you're just mentally not there yet. I think like you said, taking that step back sometimes can end up being more fruitful for you. I actually posted something, not to like go on a whole tangent here, but I posted something on my personal TikTok the other day, just because I'm going through like a little bit of an injury, just kind of asking people what their experience is with taking a full week off during a marathon block. And I can't even tell you how many people commented and were just saying, I felt stronger. Like I took a week off, completely rested, and I came back and I was hitting my paces again. I felt so much stronger mentally. I was back in it. So yeah, I think that there's a huge benefit to taking a break when you need it during training, for sure.
It's so true. I've done it before. You know, even like sometimes my coach will give me easy weeks, like we'll cut my mileage in half, and I come back to that first run, back to regular mileage, and you would think like I'm ready to go and hit the world's record. Like that's how good it feels. You know, even when I was training for Chicago, this is very much in the very, very beginning of the training. I went on a family vacation with my family and I brought my running shoes, and usually I run when I'm away. That stuff doesn't bother me, but we were doing so much and we were so busy and I was just so tired that I was like, I'm not running. And it's perfectly okay. I didn't run for like 10 days, maybe even 2 weeks. And you know, I came back, I was still feeling great. It didn't hurt my performance in my race. It didn't affect my training at all. Sometimes just taking a break is better than not taking a break.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. And then last question I have for you is just, what's coming up next for you? What are you training for right now, if anything?
Yeah, so I have the New York City Half in March. I've actually never ran that one before. I'm really excited for that one. And then I have the Brooklyn Half in May. That'll be my fourth time running it. The lottery has really been in my favor for the past 4 years, so I don't know how much longer I'll be in a row running this race. And then I'm also running the New York City Marathon again in November. So amazing. I'm really excited to be running that again. I don't know what my time goal will be for that. I don't really have anything in mind at the moment. If anything, it'll be more of a course PR. It is a hard course, but who knows? I might be like, let's go for it. Let's see if we can get an overall PR. I really don't know what will happen. I'm going to wait and see.
Yeah, we got the whole year before then, so exactly. That makes sense. Well, cool. And then if anybody wants to follow along with you as you're working towards New York, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on my personal Instagram. It's my first underscore last name, A-T-H-I-N-A underscore S-O-N-I-T-I-S. If you see a running account in my bio, don't follow it because I won't accept you. It's more for like my rat. I post my rats on there, so it's more for just family and friends. But I do post all of my races and all of other fun stuff in my life on my personal Instagram. So you can follow along on there. Awesome. Also on my TikTok. So I do post running content every once in a while. I'm very bad at it, but every once in a while I'll post running videos here and there on TikTok. It's my first name, not my last name.
Perfect. Well, yeah, I'll make sure to link both so that everybody can see it as well. But thank you so much for walking through your journey. This was awesome. I'm really excited you get to run it back in New York again this year. Excited to see how that race turns out for you. But yeah, just thanks again for coming on and talking to
us
today.
Thank you so much. This is great. I had a great time.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying My First Marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. As a reminder, check out myfirstmarathonpodcast.com for free resources. And if you can't get enough MFM for $5 a month, you can also get access to extended episodes, bonus content, and a Q&A corner featuring some of our most popular guests. Check out the exclusives tab on the website for more information. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.